Hello, I'm Andy Berry, the host of Metro Morning on CBC Radio 1 99.1 in Toronto. And this is our weekly podcast, Toronto This Week. It features highlights of our local and regional shows on CBC, shows like Here and Now, Ontario Morning, and Fresh Air. But first, here's an item from Metro Morning. Radio would like to now turn your attention to television, where you may have seen in the last few weeks some new workplace safety commercials designed very much to grab your attention. In one, a woman falls from a shaky ladder, shatters a glass display, gets up with a broken arm and a face full of blood. In the other, a man drives a forklift into a shelf. It breaks. Heavy equipment falls on the man, impaling him through the chest. The ads are part of a new campaign by the Workers' Safety and Insurance Board. Its slogan, "There are no accidents." The campaign is timely. This month alone, there are four coroner's inquests underway into fatalities on construction sites. Liz Webley and Fran DeFilippis are both widows. Their husbands were killed on the job in construction. They now speak for Threads of Life, an advocacy group for workplace safety. To both of you, good morning.
Good morning.
Liz Webley, you're campaigning against workplace hazards because of your husband's death. Can you tell us something of what happened to him?
He was a field supervisor for a road construction crew on the 401 near Chatham area. Dick, my husband, prepared to move the traffic from the driving to the passing lane with the barrels that you see. And he had done a long stretch already, and he was almost finished. He had five more to go, and one of the cars veered right through the barrels and struck him and killed him instantly. Mm. We found out later the drivers had been gambling all night and were returning home and fell asleep.
Oh, my.
Yes.
Fran, what's your husband's story?
Well, Naz was a field engineer, and they were on the 18th floor of a luxury condominium building in Toronto. They went into the elevator shaft to brace a wall from the roof down, so there was concrete being poured into a wall that was suspended from the elevator. In the elevator shaft, there's four walls, and they rely on the safety platform to keep them safe. Himself and his partner, Mark, had gone in to brace the wall, as I said. The concrete from the wall broke, the concrete fell, and the safety platforms collapsed, and they fell 18 floors to the parking lot garage. The investigative report revealed that the wall was built incorrectly and that the safety platforms were built by rotted 2x4s, not by the standard aluma beams that are required by law. So as a result, both of them died from multiple blunt force injuries.
The slogan of this campaign is "There are no accidents." And we've discussed this on the air before, that frequently human error is disguised in accident when what we really mean is, with a little bit of better precaution and planning, we could have averted the sorts of tragedies you just described. Do you accept that slogan, "There are no accidents," Liz?
Yes, I do. However, there are lapses of judgment even with operators and that, and I think that has to be dealt with, too, on a daily basis. However, in my husband's case, that still happens on the roadway, that people have to put the barrels out, and it's still a very dangerous job because there are some things that are unpredictable, like people.
Well, I guess going back to the word accident, I mean, if those students had not been gambling all night and were not so exhausted and fatigued and perhaps more attentive to what was going on the road, your husband would be alive. So it's hard
That's
to know
right.
whether to call that accidental.
That was their choice, wasn't it?
Of course.
It was their choice to drive.
Yeah. Fran, what's your attitude toward the word accident?
Well, I also have to agree that every individual is responsible for the person beside them to a degree, especially in the workplace. We all should look out for each other, even when someone is doing something that they know is wrong. You know, it is our norm, if you will, as society, to just close your eyes and say, "It's that guy's problem, it's not my problem." Mm. However, if someone had, you know, in my husband's tragedy, had spoken up or had said something like, "This doesn't look right," or, for example, the supervisor had instructed the carpenter to create that wall with inadequate fasteners. Hmm. Had the carpenter said, "No, that's wrong," and stood up for his rights or for everybody else's rights, I see it on an everyday basis. I watch people climb ladders that aren't stabilized. And you think to yourself, you know, A, what are you thinking? And B, why isn't the person that you're with saying something? I just think it should be a societal thing. Everybody should come together and say, you know what, let's watch out for each other when it comes to safety. I think there is a place for that.
Hmm. Those WSIB commercials on television are pretty in your face. They are pretty strong medicine. How have you two experienced them? You've seen them, I assume. So.
Yes, I have.
What did you make? How did you react to it?
I thought, good for them. I thought that was a very, attention-grabbing way to get someone's attention put it mildly. I think it just is a real educational effort on their part to turn us around and make us take notice.
I was actually at the launch before the WSIB made these commercials public, and I will tell you, as I sat in the audience of 1,000 people, it was gut-wrenching for me. Mm-hmm. It was very difficult to watch. It hit home as a victim, of course, and I at first was a little taken back, but then I realized that I was actually very glad that WSIB has stopped being passive about workplace safety and had the courage to put this in your face and say, you know what, this is real. I really think it will cause people to think twice before they do something.
Thank you for adding to that thinking, both of you. Good talking to you this morning.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Liz Webley and Fran DeFilippis are with Threads of Life, a group campaigning for workplace safety. This is Canada's Healthy Workplace Week. I'll remind you that we're the next-door neighbors of the Workers' Safety and Insurance Board on Front Street. And if you were ever traveling maybe to a baseball game and if you never stopped to look at it, there is this stunning display along the wall, tablets engraved with the stories of people who've lost their lives in the workplace, and a very impressive piece of statuary as well. And you see people all the time. They notice them. They stop. They read one of them, and then four of them, and then eight of them, and become really absorbed by them. And they tell the kinds of stories that have been all too common, the kind we just heard. I'm Andy Berry, and this is our weekly podcast, Toronto This Week. Now here's Mary Ito with a highlight from this week's Ontario Morning.
Yesterday, the Ontario Lottery and Gaming Corporation released a statement defending its security practices, saying that Ontario is a leader in lottery security. This was in response to a CBC News investigation that found a disproportionate number of clerks and retailers win large lotteries in Ontario. The CBC's Catherine Burrell talked to one lottery ticket retailer who's right here in the CBC Broadcasting Center. Here's how he reacted to the news.
My name is Mo, and I knew this news 2 years ago, so it didn't affect me. Because I knew we never had that kind of thing before. So you got to stay clean, and we're clean anyway.
In terms of how much business the lotto is at your particular establishment, how much would you say it is?
It's quite significant, but, you know, we go with the rules. We have repeat clientele, so there must be, you know, we're doing something all right, so that's why they keep on coming. We provide them good service. So that's how it is, you know, you're supposed to be fair. And the lottery machine itself tells you when you're a winner or a loser.
That was a lottery ticket retailer right here in the CBC Broadcasting Center. Now the Ontario Lottery and Gaming Corporation claims they offer one of the safest, most secure, and most highly regulated products in the world. But Brian Yalen thinks more can be done to protect consumers. He's the spokesperson for Canada's Gambling Watch Network, and he joins us on the line from Kingston. Good morning.
Good morning, Mary.
So the CBC report said that of the roughly 60,000 lottery ticket sellers in Ontario, retailers won nearly 200 times in the past 7 years, and the average prize was $500,000. What was your reaction when you first heard that news?
Well, in a sense, I think the part of it that I was surprised at is how easy it seems to be for the person who is the sales clerk to simply switch a ticket. If you have a client that would trust what you might say and you think that you could pull the wool over their eyes and pocket $500,000, that's got to be awfully tempting for a store clerk in that kind of a situation. I think it's unfortunate that I'm sure the vast majority of the operations are totally legitimate and clean, but here's this potential. So it is unfortunate, although we all know that that people can be greedy. So I think there's a kind of a side in which the public aren't surprised and a side in which we are surprised. It's the OLCG's side of this that I find quite disturbing.
Mm. Well, going back even one step further, I mean, why even let that chance happen? A number of people I know commented on the story and said they were even surprised that retailers and clerks can buy tickets.
Well, in some jurisdictions, those who sell the products are not permitted to consume them at the same time. Yes, that's quite true, and I think that would be one way to put a protection into the system. But another one would be for the consumer themselves to have a clear opportunity to see whether their ticket won or not, and a way in which they could confirm that their ticket was the winning ticket or a losing ticket without having to rely on the store clerk.
Mm. Well, so the corporation has come out and said they have one of the safest and most secure systems in the world. What are your comments on that?
Well, except that the story points out that they knew 4 years ahead of time that this gentleman in the story had been defrauded of his winnings, and they did everything in their power to cover up that fact for 4 years, and he had to go to court in the end to defend that he was telling the truth.
You're talking about Bob Edmonds, right?
Yes, in the story last night on the Fifth Estate. This is, I find, quite disturbing, and yet the problem here is that the OLCG has an interest in maintaining its profit margin and its own image, and the appearance that it's doing everything according to regulation. And so what we need immediately is some kind of an independent ombudsperson or an office of complaint in which a consumer can bring a complaint in regard to their winnings or a ticket and that sort of thing. In the long term, what we need is an absolute separation between those who regulate gambling and those who profit from it. Unless we've got that, as they have in New Zealand and other jurisdictions, we are never going to have a situation in which the consumer is protected.
So what does that mean about the role of the government then?
Well, we've bought the system in Canada that is in place in the U.S., where the politicians and the operators are in bed together, and it's the consumer that pays for the honeymoon. This is not a system that works well for the consumer. It works well for the people who profit from it, which is the government and the operator, but it does not work well for the consumer. We need a system in which the politicians set up absolute independence, like the courts are independent, so that they cannot be influenced by government officials. That's the kind of system we need, because there's billions and billions of dollars at stake here, and there's always going to be a temptation towards something not being right. And so there has to be absolute independence, which is not something we have in any jurisdiction in Canada.
Mm. Now, what advice, in the meantime, what advice would you have for people then who play lotteries?
Well, if you are a lottery ticket holder, and if you have any suspicion that your ticket has won, you need to be very, very vigilant about the way in which you discern that that is a winning ticket or a losing ticket. And that involves the vigilance that you have when you turn that ticket in, wherever you turn it in. And it also involves your being willing, if you think something has gone wrong, to contact the police and contact a lawyer, probably at this point in time. I would prefer that there was a complaints bureau, independent bureau, that you could bring your complaint to. But at this point, you're on your own hook out there, but you need to be very, very vigilant.
Mm. I also heard that, it was suggested that people, if they buy tickets, they should write their name on the back of the ticket and also make sure that they check the ticket themselves.
All these measures by which the consumer offers their own protection will help immensely. The problem is that you're tempted to trust the people you're dealing with, and although it may well be that 98 or 99% of the time that's appropriate, in those odd occasions where it isn't, you're at risk of losing out on your winnings.
Mm-hmm. And finally, do you have any advice for the Ontario Lottery and Gaming Corporation?
Well, they're stuck with the situation where their efforts are going to be directed toward protecting themselves, and this is a huge issue. We've been hammering at them for a long time for more consumer protection. We cannot get it from them, and so this is a major problem. But I don't look to them to solve that problem. They're going to stay doing what they're doing, which is protecting their own image. And what we as consumers need is an independent way in which they are held to account for what happens.
Thanks for joining us this morning, Mr. Yaland.
Thank you very much, Mary.
Brian Yaland is the spokesperson for Canada's Gambling Watch Network, a citizens group concerned about consumer protection. He was on the line from Kingston.
That was Mary Ito, the host of Ontario Morning, heard weekday mornings from 6 to 8:30 throughout much of southern and central Ontario on CBC Radio 1. Now here's Matt Galloway with a highlight from this week's Here and Now.
Hip-hop is everywhere. If you turn on any hip-hop video, you'll see attractive young women showing off their dance moves. A lot of those women are from Toronto, and one of the most successful talent agencies for those dancers is also based here in this city. Blaze Entertainment has worked with the likes of Keisha Shante, the Black Eyed Peas, Nelly Furtado, and others. Tonight, they're launching a website in the hope of increasing their business. To tell us more, I'm joined by the co-founder of Blaze Entertainment, Fatima Wilson. Hi, good to see you.
Hi.
For people who haven't heard of your company, tell us what it is that you do.
Basically, we specialize in dance classes, workshops for dancers, artist development for artists. I do casting for music videos, and my business partner is Jay Blaze. She does choreography. So,
why was this company created?
At first, it started off for something for us to do to keep out of trouble, you know.
Yeah.
So we started off, and then people started really enjoying the shows we put on. And one of the forums we started off was FemFat, which is the Honey Jam. It was an all-female industry event. So we started doing that. And then people started asking us to do videos. The first video we did was, it's so funny, this guy named Decisive. And then once we started doing that, it started snowballing.
And you've done a lot.
Yeah, we've done a lot of videos. We work with a lot of artists in Toronto and the States. So at the moment, we're branching out more to the States as well as in Canada.
It's interesting because this is a company run by women in an industry that really is still dominated by men. All the big players are men. What sort of challenges does that lead to? What have you faced in that strange industry?
A lot of times, they don't take us serious. They think, oh, she's so cute, or... oh, they're just shaking their ass in the video, and dance isn't really, they're not really dancing, they're really not doing anything. But then when they start seeing the process and the effort we put into it, they're like, oh, these girls are serious, they know what they're doing. So that was really hard to prove. We had to prove ourselves all the time, and it took a while for people to recognize like dance as a career, because a lot of people think it's just, oh, something for fun. But we know a lot of people, especially in the States, that their career is dancing.
Is it lucrative? Because in any video that you see, for the most part, there's some sort of dance going on. I mean, people are in the back doing something, and then it's just dancers for a while too.
It's very lucrative. Yeah. I one of my friends, he's Usher's choreographer. He bought his house online. Like he's like telling me, oh, I'm gonna buy my house online.
So. But if you're a woman or a young woman that's involved in this and it's that lucrative, are there things that they have to be worried about? Are there pitfalls that they could fall into because it's such a strange industry and because there's so much money and pressure involved?
Yeah, a lot of girls, they don't research what they're getting into. There's an easy way to do it, and there's a hard way to do it, and the best way to do it is to have an agent. And in Canada, they don't do that. So what we do is we protect the dancer, because a lot of people will hire dancers and they don't give them the benefits that they're supposed to have. When you're in the States, you have an agent and they tell you, okay, this is what it is, and we work out the money situation. A lot of times people will say, oh, can you do it for just for exposure? Exposure.
Expose the money to me.
Exactly. I really hate that word when people, can you just do it for exposure? We've been doing this for a long time. Exposure isn't something that after a while you have to respect the person and their art. And a lot of people don't do that.
You have been very successful here in Canada, and you're going to be branching out into the United States. Tell me quickly about that.
We decided that we're going to go to LA. LA, because New York right now is really saturated, so we wanted to go somewhere else. And since Jay's really, a lot of people know her for her reggae, and there's not a lot of reggae out in LA. So we're trying to like go over there and show some new stuff to them. And also just because there's more opportunities, there's so many artists out there coming out from LA, it's easier to get work and things like that.
When you're big and successful, don't forget about us in
Toronto. <We won't. laughs>
Good luck.
Thank you.
And good luck with the launch, which is happening tonight. Thanks
yes.
so much.
Thank you.
That was Matt Galloway, host of Here and Now, heard weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on CBC Radio 1, 99.1 in Toronto. And that will do it for our weekly podcast, Toronto This Week. You can hear all our shows live on CBC Radio 1. If you're in Toronto, that's on 99.1, and live on the web at cbc.ca/Toronto. And don't forget, much of our network programming is also now available via podcast. You'll find that at cbc.ca/podcast. We're also looking for some feedback on our podcast, and you can email us at metromorning@toronto.cbc.ca. I'm Andy Berry, the host of Metro Morning. We're heard weekday mornings from 6 to 8:30 on CBC Radio 1, 99.1 in Toronto. For all of us here at CBC Radio in Toronto, have a good week. We'll have another podcast for you next weekend.